Hey everyone, thanks for tuning back into the Davidson Hang podcast. We have a special guest today, James Kawainui. I got it right, right?
You did.
And yeah, I feel like every time I meet a Hawaiian person, like you guys are always like very spiritual and healers and just have positive, good energy. So yeah, really excited to have you on the podcast and just get to be with you. And yeah, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. And I'm kind of excited about, you know, where we go and what we do today. So
Yeah. I know when we first chatted, we had a lot of similarities in terms of just like healing, like just been on a long healing journey and just being able to share and spread the, you know, ultimately we both want to leave the world better off than when we joined. Right.
And exactly.
You know, I think some of the most beautiful people have a lot of depth and just have a lot of experiences and stories to share. So yeah, I think this would be a very enlightening conversation. And I think it's awesome that, you know, men like us are open to being vulnerable and open to have these conversations that men are afraid of talking about sometimes, you know?
I celebrate when I get to do this with other men. And I think that we need more of it.
And yeah.
Because I think that we are, sometimes we get lost in old paradigms and the old paradigms keep us very limited or can keep us very limited.
Yeah.
And so being open to conversation like this and talking about things that really matter. I mean, you know, I laugh because I when I talk to my clients, I ask them, I said, you know, when, and not to use women as an example, but just as kind of like a backdrop, when women get together, they literally talk about anything and everything. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's a free for all, whatever shows up and however they're feeling, you know, it's there. And we haven't, I have those conversations, let me put it that way, with men. And sometimes it feels like they're few and far between. So to be able to sit down with someone and have that conversation to me is like, I'm like, yay.
Yeah, you're right. It is, I think sometimes with men, it's easier to talk about like the sports or like, you know, but yeah, it takes a little bit longer to get to that, like deeper, like maybe it's like, not meeting number 9 or 10, or, you know, it's never the first, usually it's not the first conversation where we talk about like deeper stuff, you know.
I have to feel safe, you know. Yeah. We have to feel safe before we will enter that arena, you know. And when we do, then, and we feel like we can be supported anyway, that's my experience, then I will be more open to maybe having that conversation and stepping into that place, you know?
Yeah, psychological safety is huge. And I, you know, we were talking about this, but I mean, I'll be the first to admit that I definitely feel safer chatting with women, right? A lot of times, you know?
Most of my deeper friendships when I was growing up and in some ways still to this day are with women. You know, for me, as with the work that I do, 70 to 80% of the people I work with are women, right? Yeah. It's not because that's how I planned it. Is that just those are the people that are looking me up or finding me.
Mm.
You know? And that's why I said every time I have, and I have a few male clients now. And like, I see them on my schedule and I go, yes, I get to talk to a guy today, you know, but those things come from some really deep behaviors and some really deep patterns that we carry. And those patterns go back, you know, depending on your view of evolution and everything else like that. But those patterns go back for thousands and hundreds of thousands of years. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, it's buried inside of our genetic makeup. You know, we have different roles as gender roles, or we did, I should say. Those gender roles are changing, and they have been changing for the last generation or two. But typically speaking, we had very designated gender roles, you know?
Yeah.
Men were tasked with the responsibility of protecting and providing. That was our job, you know? The basic programming underneath that, if you look at, and I know sometimes I get kind of crazy, but I look at some of the things that we do in human behavior as programs, like computer programs, right? Yeah. That provide and protect is part of the mainframe or the operating system that runs us, okay? And that programming goes back, like I said, so far. And so we were tasked with making sure that our species survived as a race, which yeah. means that it was taking care of our offspring and the women, the feminine, because they were the mechanism. I'm just going to be really generic here. The mechanism for providing the next generation, right?
Yeah.
So we were tasked with that, and so we became very focused on our responsibilities over the year. But there started to be, in some ways, a distortion of those understandings. And I think that's what we were talking about the day when we got together, about what those distortions are, you know?
Yeah, I think Tony Robbins explained it pretty well to me. And he has a funny skit on this with him and his wife, but he's tried to simplify it in a way that I was like, oh, wow, that's an easy way of explaining it. But he was saying, like, for men back when we were hunters, when we used to run, like, chase after, like, you know, a cheetah or something that's like a fast cat, right? We can't really talk and run at the same time. So it'd just be like you would just look at each other and, you know, no talking, right? It was just like, it's like over there, here, you know, like, and then with women, it's like the opposite because, you know, when they were gathering berries and stuff like that, they had to be extremely descriptive. So it was like, you take a turn on the right and then it's like kind of green, but like not too dark green, but like the lighter green. So like they were extremely descriptive. So they can tell you like the whole, they call it the meadow report. Yeah. They can tell you every single, where it was, like the degrees. And then with men, it's like when we're running and chasing and running at 20 miles an hour, you can't really talk. So it's like, I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of a funny way of putting it. But yeah, he's like, yep. He's like, my wife can give me a 45-minute meta report. And it's just funny.
And the reality is that I'm not interested. And that's not because I don't love her and I don't think that the information is important. It's just that I'm not interested. That's too much information for me.
Yeah, right? Yeah. But my wife is like the same way. She's like, she can literally remember stuff from like when we first met like 9 years ago, like to the T, what I was wearing, the location, like the temperature. And I'm like, what? I can barely remember what I ate like this morning.
And you're supposed to remember all that stuff too. You know that.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. I have a cheat. I have like a cheat sheet where I feel like now digital, there's like all, you know, you put all the dates and everything on there.
Don't mess up. Well, you know, there's another part inside of that makes sense. And it goes to that deeper conditioning or that deeper programming, you know, because we are tasked with providing and protecting, our jobs became very, very clear. And so if we weren't able to protect, then the species didn't live. Pretty basic, right? Mm-hmm. And when we went out to hunt, we learned something, and it's similar to what Tony Robbins is talking about, but it goes, in some ways it goes a little bit farther, right? Mm. When, if a group of us are hunting and we come upon, say, a herd of deer, right? There's so many of them there that if I was to focus on the herd and the herd gets spooked and they all run off, without my being able to focus on one particular animal or one specific thing, I lose track of everything, uh-huh. right? And so in some ways, men have in the, I don't know if it's the mentality, but the focus of like predator cats, let's just put it that way. you know, in all the nature shows that you ever watch, and you see the cheetah running through for the gazelle, right? The cheetah's not chasing the whole herd. The cheetah picks one gazelle out. You know, when the wolf is hunting, they pick one moose or they pick one deer out, and they relentlessly track that deer, right? So we become very single-minded inside of the way that we look at things. A woman, on the other hand, has multiple responsibilities because she's there. She's taking care of the children. She's making sure that there was food. She's gathering the berries and the other things that supplemented our diet. Yeah. And she was being in a relationship with all the other women in the cave or in the clan. Right. Yeah. Because if you were thrown out of the clan because you didn't fit in, your chances of survival were very, very, very small. So women learn in some ways relationship and getting together or getting along with people way before we did, because when we were home, right, all of those things in some ways were done for the day. And so there was this place where, again, I know it sounds really basic, but we had those basic responsibilities. And that became part of our genetic makeup over time, because that's how we learn. We learn through repetition. And so when we repeat over generations, then the body learns how to adapt itself, right? And that adaption or that adaptation goes all the way down into our DNA. So in some ways, we're hardwired for that.
Yeah. I think it's so tough because the human need to fit in and to belong sometimes supersedes our self-expression, our authentic way of being, right? Like how many times, even now, we've both done the work for as long as we have, there's still instances where like, I'm like, oh man, like I want to fit in. And this, I might not even want to do this, but I'm just doing it because I think that's kind of what society would want us to do, right? But sometimes I'm like, do I want to actually do this? You know, it's interesting.
Yeah, it's you're right in our need to relate, right? Because as hunter-gatherers, as we, the clans got bigger. So, you know, first it was a family group and then it was the clans. And then I know I keep going back there, but then, and then more and more. And then eventually what happened is we stopped moving, roving, and we became stationary. In other words, we created towns and we created settlements where we stayed, where we settled, right? And inside of that settlement, then we had to change the way we related to people because it was more and more people. So how do I fit inside of, in some ways, the hierarchy of what that was? And so, again, to be ousted from the clan or to be shunned then would mean that my chances of survival are less, right?
Yeah.
Safety in numbers.
Yeah, I mean, it's so crazy that even like looking at Korean and Japanese culture, right? People would rather commit suicide than like not fit in. Like,
step us, yeah.
Yeah, it's you know, it's crazy to think like how many suicides there are from, you know, even cyberbullying, right? Like people literally commit suicide all the time just because they, you know, they're being ostracized from the group, right? It's crazy to think. And I feel like the problem's getting worse, you know, as more and more feedback and as people can hide behind this, like the internet and just say things, you know, and there's no less consequences associated with it.
But you bring up an important point, and that is the role or the understanding of consequences, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of off of the subject that we're talking about, but when we take responsibility for all the choices that we make, then we take responsibility for the consequences that happen as a result of that, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think our lives change as we start to do that, because we realize that everything I do has an effect, right? And that effect is because of me in some ways and the choice that I made. right?
Mm.
So changing, that changes how I want to relate. Does it mean that I don't stand up for myself and take care of what I feel is important? No, it just means that I become aware of what happens when I do and when I don't.
Mm. Yeah, I feel like Hawaiians really get that concept of the responsibility, right? I feel like more so than other areas of the U.S.
I think it has to do, again, you know, we look at all of this stuff and we go back to, in some ways, our genetic makeup, right? Mm-hmm. So Hawaiians lived in very close-knit communities for a really long time, you know? And because we were so isolated, I mean, there's thousands of miles of ocean, right? So there was this understanding of having to coexist. And how do we create that? Now, I will be honest and say that we were actually a very tribal society. And so there were lots of strife and interactions between villages and between chiefs, if you want to, right? Mm-hmm. For control. And that's another aspect, I think, of the male psyche, if you want to, mm-hmm. is this need to control, mm-hmm. right? I think that one of the times when we were talking, I was talking to you about an idea that I came up with, or a way of looking at what we do as the gladiator mentality, right? Because that place of provide and protect, I think protect over time got distorted. Mm-hmm. And protect became power, and protect mm-hmm. became control over people,
hmm.
right? There's yeah. always there's always that hierarchy. There's always that pecking order of who's in charge. And, mm. and because in all animal species, you see that the alpha male, so just put it that way, is the one that is in control energetically and physically with the rest of the pack, with the rest of the group, right?
Yeah.
And so that gladiator mentality, one aspect of that gladiator mentality says conquer and rule. And if you look back over all our societies over the last 5 or 10,000 years, that's really what it's been about. I mean, so yeah. like you think about the Roman Empire, and you think about the Mongols the Mongols of Mongolia, or some of the other, you know, even the Egyptians and some of the larger civilizations. It was that idea of control, right? How can a very small group of people over hundreds of years end up controlling a vast amount of land? And I'm talking about the Romans, right? So that idea of conquer and rule, conquer and control, right? What became very prevalent inside of our society. So it makes it hard as men to do that, because I don't want to show vulnerability because I don't want to be conquered and not be the alpha.
Yeah. Right?
And it leads to lots of conflict because we get lost inside of that idea of being the most powerful, that we lose sight of the fact that we still have to be in relationship with each other. It's not always being in control of other people. It's about how I relate to people. And I think sometimes we get a lot, that programming is running so deep inside of us that it becomes part of all aspects of our life, not just outside of our home, but in our home as well. And that's a place when we don't see equality with our partner, when the reality is that we are in this relationship and there is actually a balance of power. It's not one being stronger or better or more than the other. It's the way that we relate. Yeah. And inside of relationship, there is no power over one or the other.
Mm. Yeah, I think one of the, I was just reading a book, about like parent, like this called The Psychology of Winning, right? And it talks a lot about how I think what's tough is because when we have parents, there's this control or this power that's telling you what to do. I'm smarter than you, I'm better. So I think when you grow up with that mindset, it's like you're just so used to that, and it really does affect your sense of worth and self-esteem, right? Because if someone's like, you're wrong, stop doing that, you know, like you don't know what you're talking about. It's like your self-esteem, you're just going to get lower and lower. And most of us have that, right? Just
I think the first word we learned is no.
Yeah.
So we start out from that place, right?
Yeah.
And you're right, because and again, we can look at that. We can look at the place inside of parenting, right? And is it about control, or is it about the fact that the parent with the more experience has a better understanding of life and what will keep you out of harm's way?
Right, out of harm, yeah.
The distortion of it happens when it turns into control.
Mm.
Right? You will do what I say.
Yeah.
And so if we live or grow up as a subordinate, in other words, not being in control, right? And the pressure of that is really great, then it may push us to the extreme of that, right?
Yeah.
And if we live inside of, how would you say that? Countries or governments where there is a lot of control, right? And suppression.
Yeah.
Then there's this feeling of apathy and in some ways worthlessness.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And so watching how all that plays, and yet realizing that I am still a divine being. I am still, in some ways, I don't know how people would see this, but in control of my destiny, even though the greater majority and the consensus would be that I am not in control of my own destiny, that the powers that be, that society, that the things outside of me are actually in control of who I am and what I can become. But that's not true.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. I think a lot of us, I think agency is like really important, right? Once we feel like we have control, and I think it's a decision, right? At the end of the day, I think we can all be in Landmark, they call it like being at effect or being at cause. If we're being at cause and we, like you said, we take responsibility, even if it seems like, because ultimately we can't control other people, right? As much as we like to control, there's it's literally nothing we can do about it. So the once we surrender and just, you know, instead of like clash, like, you know, and I think people sometimes just want to feel heard too, right? So once we acknowledge that, even if we don't agree with it, we can just respect that, like, okay, like I hear you. Right. I think that's the first step. I think a lot of us think the better way, it's like, well, let me tell you why you're wrong. And then it's like right off the bat, it's like, it's not going to end well.
No. Whenever we feel like we're wrong, our immediate response is always going to be defensive.
Yeah, exactly.
And as soon as I move into a defensive posture, then I'm not listening to you anymore, because I am more concerned at that point with my survival than anything else. And even though I may not be in a situation where I have to be concerned about my survival, that is the program that's running in the background. And most of those programs are unconsciously running. We're not aware of those, of how and why we're responding.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's ingrained at us. Like, I think parents have a lot to do with it. I think what we perceive, what we didn't get, like we also strive for that. So for instance, like if I perceive I didn't get a lot of praise, I'm going to be someone that's seeking external validation. But we all know that it really comes from within. Once we accept ourselves, then we can be free and less needy, you know, or codependent.
It's not, that is not a mindset that is very prevalent in our society, though, because that's not what we're taught. I mean, I know what that feels like. I came from a household where I was abused as a child, and I very rarely got that positive affirmation about that. And you're right. I worked really hard in my life to get that. And it was funny because in the past, and this is way back, I'm talking about in my corporate days when I was a manager in a large company, I would meet people and I would look at them as I was meeting them and I would say, you're going to like me. I'm going to make sure of it. And that's where it was coming from, though. It was coming from that need to be liked and that need to be appreciated, right?
Yeah.
But again, you know, there's the distortion of that. So, you know, there's always the, if you want to look at it like that, the yin and the yang or the positive and the negative of it. And I'm not talking about duality. I'm just saying that this is the natural effect, right? We swing from extremes and very rarely do we get to that place where we have balance inside of that, right? And it takes balance, it takes awareness, it takes understanding, it takes a commitment for myself to want to be inside of that place. It takes wanting to be vulnerable and admitting that I made a mistake and being able to say, I don't have all the answers. And those are three phrases that are pretty, can be very challenging for most people, you know, that ability to say I made a mistake, right? Yeah. I read a book about 6 years ago that really helped me come to understand that, because one of the things I realized inside of us is that our ability to move forward in our life in a positive way, right? In a lot of ways is built on or how we see or deal with failure. Okay, so the book was by a psychologist. Her name is Carol Dweck. She's a professor. She was a professor at Columbia. I think she's teaching at Stanford now. And she, in the book, she wrote about two different aspects of ourselves. And so she talked about somebody with a fixed mindset and somebody with a growth mindset. And both of those had to do with the way that we look at failure. So a person with a fixed mindset, because there were places in my life when I read this that I realized that I was very in a fixed mindset position.
Yeah.
We have this place where we have difficulty dealing with failure because failure immediately says that this is something that I'm not good at or I can't do. And inside of that understanding of failure, which means that I'm no good, basically, right? So what ends up happening is that I try less things in my life because I'm worried or afraid of not being good enough inside of those things. And there's this unrealistic expectation that says whatever I do, I'm supposed to be good at automatically, right? Mm-hmm. And which is not true. Mm-hmm. And we know it's not true, but it's the way that the unconscious mind is thinking, right? So inside of the idea of the fixed mindset, I stick to the things that I know. I very rarely stretch myself out. And as I get older, the things that I know get narrower and narrower, which means that I try less and less things, right? The person with a growth mindset, though, has a completely different take on what failure looks like. Because they've gotten to a place where they don't actually even see or understand what the word failure means, because when they run up against an obstacle or something happens that would be considered a failure, the mindset inside of them instead of going, wow, I'm no good. I'm no good. I'm never going to be any good at this. And I know I've heard myself say this lots of times, right? But the person with a growth mindset goes like this and it goes, huh, this didn't work. Let me try another way. Even just saying it, you feel the difference in the two energies.
Yeah.
Right? Because the person that with a growth mindset doesn't even look at this is the end. This is it goes no further than this because I failed. They actually look at that and they go, wait a minute, I know there's a different way and I know there's a better way of doing this. Let me find that way, right? And so just having that, and it blew my mind when I read this book, because I was looking at my life in all these different places and then went, oh my God, look at the places where you have a fixed mindset and you haven't given yourself the opportunity to grow or even get better at something, right? Mm. Just because I want to do a hole in one and go out and swing a golf club doesn't mean I'm going to end up like Tiger Woods. You know, not everybody is Stephen Curry. Yeah, I want to shoot a basketball, but I may not be able to make a hoop to save my life. Does that make me a failure? No, it just means that if I want to get better at that, I have to practice and I have to want to get better.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We lock ourselves inside that idea, I think, of failure as we go through our lives. You know, and I know we may be getting a little bit off the subject because it's, how does that relate to men? And where we are, right? It gives us less opportunity to want to spread ourselves or to open ourselves up, because I don't want anybody to see what my failures are, right?
Yeah. And I think we can also be very competitive too, right? Like, it's hard for us to truly be grateful that, wow, my friend's doing extremely well, and not make it mean like, oh man, like he's kind of making more money, or he seems like he's in a relationship, and it's been a while since I've had a girlfriend or a relationship, you know? So it's hard for us to just truly, truly just be like, wow, I'm super happy, and actually genuinely mean it. Like, wow, I'm so glad that Brandon's doing extremely well. For most men are kind of like, oh my God, I need to make more money. You know, what if my wife leaves me for someone else who's more successful, you know?
And that's the idea of the superior man, right?
Mm.
We would kill ourselves with comparison.
Yeah.
That comparison will always, you know, as long as we allow it to be the marker or the standard of who we are, what we will do is we will always look outside of ourselves for our worth, our self-worth. And not look inwardly and be able to not come to terms with that, but to be able to see that I am actually have more value than I'm giving myself credit for.
Mm. Yeah. And one of my friends, Omar, he always jokes around and he's like, I'm flossom. And he's like basically saying that, you know, I appreciate everything about me, the good and even the flaws, like, and just knowing that that's what makes me unique, right? And that I'm never going to be perfect. And once you know, he's like, once I accept that, I can just be in life. I don't have to worry about like pleasing others or how I look today. It's like, oh, I made a mistake, and that's fine. You know, I'm allowed to make a mistake. So
yeah
that's nice.
Without those mistakes and without those understandings of things that we look at as failure, how do we grow? How do we become better people, right?
Yeah.
And not get caught or not stay in the same place. And this is an interesting thing, because as we start to recognize that in ourselves and we choose to make the change or to choose to live a life in a different way, we're pushing up against the collective consciousness. We're pushing up against all these people that are caught inside of that paradigm that don't see a way out, right? Mm. And energetically, it's like me being in a stadium of 10,000 and I'm cheering for the other team and everybody else is cheering for the home team and they drown me out, right?
Yeah.
So from an energetic standpoint, that's what it can kind of feel like. When we start stepping away from all of that and going, wow, I want to go in a different direction. I don't want to be or feel like other people feel.
That's a really good analogy. Yeah.
Right. That's the collective consciousness. That's the energy of humanity as it moves in one direction and in a direction. And so in order to change my life, I have to realize that there is that energy that's behind me, which means that, not that I have to be even more committed, but to be aware of that as I continue to make my choices and as I continue to maybe stumble and fall, but get up and do it again and do it again. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think it's crazy to think that at one point, you know, these were things like women weren't allowed to vote. Slaves were legal. Like all this stuff happened. And it's crazy to think, well, because everyone else is doing it, so it must be okay. Right. So it takes really courage, like you said, being that one out of 10,000 voices in the stadium to be like, well, wait a minute. Like what this Holocaust thing doesn't seem right. You know, this like is, something's going on here. Let me do something about it versus like, well, you know, my soldier or my manager says like, you know, this is just what I do. So I'm just going to do it or else I'm going to get in trouble. You know, it's just interesting to see how there's so many things that were kind of like, well, who says it's, you know, the LGBT people can't get married. Like, you know, and it's like, even stuff like that, we're still working on. It's like, it's crazy, right? Like the collective consciousness is so strong, you know, and it takes a while to kind of get past these paradigms that have been around for thousands and thousands of years, you know?
The paradigm that I think we hold on to inside of that is that these people are better than these other people, or I'm better than this person, right? There's no, you know, the Hawaiians call that lokahi, which is unity. There's no unity inside of that because what we do is we create separation. And as soon as we create separation, then the mindset is me against whoever it is or us against, right? And whenever we get into that space, then there is no place for where we can connect. These people are strange, or these people are different because they don't think like us. Does that make them wrong? Does that make them bad human beings? Not necessarily. Just makes them means that they have a different idea or a different view of the world than we do. So can there be space inside that where I can allow for that different view? You know. So that I can, so I can see and appreciate the cultural differences. So I can see and appreciate the ability or the understanding that people make their choices about their sexuality or about their ethnicity or about their nationalism. You know?
Yeah, I mean it's interesting, right? Because I see there's a lot of people out there who are very, very happy with just not a lot, right? Like whether it's material, like they don't have big houses, they don't have nice cars. And some of these, you know, my like people that visit like Vietnam or some of these other countries like I've been to, they really don't have a lot, but there's so much like I see how happy they are just having a barbecue or just eating, you know what I mean? Like just very simple things. And, you know, I feel like in our society, we have everything and yet we have nothing. You know,
I think sometimes what's missing is gratitude. Yeah. There's a gratitude and embracing of life that's a little bit different. And I mean, I may be going against the grain here, but I think in Western society, there's an entitlement, feeling of entitlement that we are entitled to these things, you know?
Right.
And the reality is that an entitlement? Is it a basic standard for living? Is it something that all people should have? Yeah, in some way, yes. And it doesn't mean that I mistreat other people or look down on them or judge people that don't have the same things that I do, right? And you're right. In my experience, it seems as though the people with the least amount of material things are in some ways the happiest, right? Because there's less for me to worry about holding together.
It's true. Sometimes I used to be very envious because I grew up with just not a lot of wealth, like living off of government assistance and food stamps. And I used to be very, very envious of my friends that have multiple shore houses or just, you know, it seemed like they just had. But then the closer I got to, you know, I married like my wife, you know, his family's definitely a lot wealthier, right? But so now I'm like, wow, like it is a lot of pressure that they have where, you know, a lot of her friends go to really nice schools and have these careers that are, you know, require a doctorates or PhD or whatever. And I'm like, man, some of them, like, they seem very stressed. Like, the expectations are so high that like, I'm kind of glad my parents are just happy I even went to college, you know? It's like, I never thought of it that way, but I'm like, oh, it's kind of nice to have parents who never really looked at my grades or anything like that.
I think it's, you hit it on the head when you talk about expectations, about unrealistic expectations, right? So we've been programmed to want and need and demand certain aspects of insight in our lives. They are material gauges of success. Let's just put it that way. That makes sense. Those are all gauges for success, all those things. And so the accumulation becomes success. So we are looking at success as material. So everything that we talk about success is all outside of us. Yeah. Right. And that's why sometimes we see that people that have a lot aren't really happy. And then people that don't have a lot are jealous of the people that do, because they think that they are not successful because they don't have those things. And so there's this place where there's this constant clash like this. And so to step back from that and go, well, wait a minute, I'm alive, I have food, my family is safe, I have a roof over my head, can I get back and start looking? And that's probably the place where we start talking about gratitude, about looking at the things that I am grateful or happy that I have in my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And what does that feel like? And so if I don't have the same thing as that next person, am I not as good as they are?
Mm-hmm.
Can I be okay with who I am?
Yeah.
And that be the marker, or that be the gauge of my success. If we even need to gauge our success in any way at all.
Yeah. I think when I slow down and I'm able to just truly appreciate like the little things, I'm much happier in general. Like meditation always has me present to, you know, like the oxygen and like my house or my wife's presence in the same building as me, you know, like every time I slow down, I'm much happier in general, you know, instead of thinking about the future or the next promotion or whatever. It brings anxiety, right? When I have expectations of any sort, really.
That, I think you're hitting a very important point, and that's that point of being able to slow down and be more aware of how my mind is wanting to be in control. Because I think people get lost in thinking that their mind is who they are. And your mind is not who you are. Your mind is the part that's wants to be in control. Your mind is the part that's telling you what to do and not do. And yet we lose sight of the, in some ways, our intuition or that internal gauge or monitor about who we are, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, your mind is not who you are, because our minds are literally programmed for some very basic things, one of which is to survive. And yeah. The mind is programmed to think survival at all cost. Mm-hmm. So, right? Survival at all cost means I do everything in my power to make sure that I live.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is that for most people, we don't live in a place where we have to worry about our survival like that, even yeah. though even though that part of us is running constantly.
That's a really good point. Yeah, we're really good at survival. Like millions of, probably at this point, millions of years of survival training.
But see, going back again to like we started talking about, that basic survival, which was provide and protect, that we have as men, right, is running. Are we aware of how it's running and the effect that it is having on our life when it's out of control? Mm. Right? So out of control that instead of being in relationship with my partner, I want to control my partner.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
Just that aspect of it. Can I see my partner as an equal? Can I be comfortable enough and secure enough inside of myself that I can start to have conversations about how I feel, what I think, what I see in the world, and not be afraid of the response, because these are all things that I feel about myself inside of myself. Am I making sense?
Yeah, it's tough because I do think so many of us, it's hard for us to truly understand that other people's perspectives is also 100% true. Like, we always think, no, my opinion is the truth. Like, I'll be honest, like, I'm guilty of it too, right? Like, my wife has sometimes very different views on things. And I'm just like, that doesn't make any sense. Cause I read Gandhi, and Gandhi is smart, and I trust that he knows what he's doing. And, you know, we have different Gandhis, and, you know, her Gandhi might be someone completely different. Right. But it's hard for me to accept that sometimes.
It's can I see where whoever that person is that's in front of me, right? Can I see them and be able to just acknowledge who they are in that moment without any judgment, without having to be right or wrong, without having to do anything else except go, oh, this is this person and this is how they feel, and then stop. And inside of that, inside of stopping and seeing and accepting that this is where they are, right? There's nothing that I have to do except in that acknowledgement go, oh, okay, we may not agree. And that's okay, because you are entitled to see the world in your way. I'm entitled to see the world in my way. And if there's places where we can come together and have an understanding, great. If not, not a big deal. And I'm not being facetious when I say this, and I say, okay, this is where you are in your life. This is, we are obviously not in agreement. I'm okay with that. Blessings to you on your journey. Right?
Yeah.
That's it. Blessings to you on your journey. And I will, what I will do then, and then what that person will do is I will find the people that I resonate with, that I don't have to explain myself to, that I don't have to prove anything to them who I am, right? Mm-hmm. And inside of that, finding that resonance with other people, then I find my community. You know, people talk about finding your tribe. That's what we're doing, looking for our tribe. And if we find people that aren't, do I have to do anything except going, got it, you're not in my, you're not part of my tribe. I can see that.
And the interesting about life is I think the ones that we can't agree with the most is actually the gold. I think those are the ones, those are the angels that really is like, huh? Like if I truly am curious and I actually accept and like actually am curious or appreciate their point of view, I think those are like the most monumental, because I don't know about you, but for me, like when that happens, I'm just like, wow, I can sleep better. Like life is better. Like everything is just better when I.
They,
accept that.
They are your gurus. They are your teachers.
Yeah.
Because they're teaching you about a different aspect of reality or a different aspect of life that you may not be aware of.
Yeah.
And can you just stop long enough to listen and to take that in,
right,
and not have to have any judgment of right or wrong or good or bad, just to realize that. I remember when my teacher years and years ago said, can you love the serial murderer as much as you can love the Dalai Lama? And I looked at her and I went, no effing way I can do that. Mm-hmm. And yet she said, but you're looking at the human and not the soul. Mm-hmm. We are all in the places that we are because of the experience that we've had, experiences we had. Nobody's had the same experience as me, so nobody's going to see the world exactly the way I see it. I haven't had your experience. I don't know what happened to you in before this moment when I met you, right? Or when I meet you. And so can I just look at that and go, got it. We have different views. And then it goes like this. Okay.
Yeah.
No conflict. Mm-hmm. I don't have to be in agreement, but neither do I have to be in conflict.
Mm. I like what you said about like blessings to you, and I felt that you truly mean it. I think that's beautiful.
I do. When I say that, I say, I see this. I say, we are not in resonance. There's not a place in this moment that we find agreement. That's okay.
You know,
be well on your journey.
Mm. Wow. It's crazy to think an hour flew by already. I feel
like we're just scratching the surface, right?
I know, there's so much. I would love to have you back on for part two. I feel like you just have you hold space so well, and you know, you really take the time, right? You don't rush. Like it's rare to find, maybe because I lived in New York City. It's rare to have people who like will take the time to just hear out, you know what I mean? Like, and go in depth, right? I feel like I'm so used to, I guess, more transactional types of experiences that I'm not used to having like a more like longer, deeper conversation of this caliber, you know?
Yeah, I understand. And you're right. And our society is moving so quickly. And what I find more and more is that we listen less and less to other people. Again, comes from that place of having my own point of view and making sure everybody else understands it and buys into it.
Yeah.
And yet, how am I going to find commonality inside of my relationships if I'm so concerned about getting my point of view across that I'm not taking the time to listen to this other person? Mm. And I've already created judgments, and I've already created an idea of who that person is, and there's not even space for relationship inside of that.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
So we stay separate.
Hmm. Wow. That's deep. Wow.
We stay separate. And so can I just step inside that doorway, or can I step into that space and just start from there and then see where we get to?
It's beautiful. Yeah, everything starts with getting related, being related, right? That's foundational.
Everything starts with my choice to be in relationship and not to want to be separate.
Yeah. It's a timely message, especially because of what's been, you know, what's happened, you know, this past year with Black Lives Matters. And then, you know, I know that Pride Month is just ending, but you know, it really is just finding commonality, and it's a choice, right? Like you said, it's a choice to be curious, try to understand the other point of view, the other person's perspective.
if we looked at the world as all of us living in the same house and having to get along, it might be a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Right? We are. We live in the same house, basically. The house is our earth, right? And so wouldn't it be easier for us to live if we lived together instead of, and you understand what I mean, growing up in the household or being in relationship with people where they were always at odds to each other, right? Where is the, it's funny, the word that comes up is, where is the sacred inside of that? There's nothing sacred about that relationship. Right?
Yeah, it's you know, it is tough when, you know, you live and your parents relate to each other like they're the, you know, the devil, right? Or the worst enemy. And there's not a lot of responsibility being taken by either party, not 1%, right? So it doesn't lead to foster a good environment, you know, for.
We will either mimic that behavior, or we will see the complete distortion of it and make a choice not to.
Right.
Really. We'll step outside of the programming and the habituated pattern that we're watching, and we'll look at that and go, wow, this is dysfunctional. This isn't working.
Yeah.
And taking the idea again of the growth mindset and saying, I'm going to look for a different way because this is not working for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, James. I'll definitely, how can folks get in touch with you? What's the best way to reach out to you, have a conversation, connect?
You know, I'm asking more and more people to reach out to me. So social media is something that I'm wanting to look at and to build. So if you go to @JamesKawainui, you'll find me on Instagram. And if you look up and you look for James Kawainui on Facebook, you'll find me there. If people want to reach out to me directly, they can actually do that through, by going to jameskawainui@gmail.com. And so is my name. And I'll spell my last name, Kawainui, is Kawainui. So jameskawainui@gmail.com. Or you can actually look at my website, which is the same thing. It makes it really easy. jameskawainui.com, period. And there's ways for people to reach out. You know, one of the things that I offer to people are free 30-minute sessions. You know, if there's something that's on your mind, and if there's something that you feel like you're struggling with right now, and you would love, you know, you would like to have some help or a different perspective or maybe a direction to take, then I say, reach out to me. Let's have that conversation. And let's find a way for you to step past those obstacles so you can move forward.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll link to all that. And thank you for holding space. Thank you for healing. And yeah, I really appreciate our interactions. And thank you, Christy, for connecting us. Appreciate you.
Exactly. Christy Sullivan is who was responsible for us finding each other and having the initial conversation. So yeah, much blessings to her and everything that she does as well. So
yeah.
And I look forward to sitting with you some more and just kind of, you know, expanding and kind of figuring out, where do we want to go next and what do we want to talk about? So.
I know there's so much to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe next time it's like we could do this in the way that where if you have questions and you want to ask them, you know, we can do it that way as well. Ask me questions and we'll work through something.
Yeah, that'd be cool. We could do like a sample, like one of your 30-minute sample things, because people can have an idea of how that would look like. I think many people would be curious about that, to be honest.
I'd love to share that with you.
Okay, cool.
Let's see. All right.
Yeah. Thank you. Looking forward to that.
Listen, grateful to have spent time with you today. And I just look forward again to having the opportunity to do that again soon. Okay.
Yeah. Likewise. Thank you, James.
All righty. Okay. Have an amazing rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.